After about 18 years, just before I turned 30, I got a message that the community was disbanding. It was no longer sustainable. So they were basically like, hey, good luck.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Stoop Storytelling Series podcast. I'm Laura Wexler.
And I'm Jessica Hankin.
And this week on the podcast, hold up, I'm in a cult. Two stories about women who didn't realize what they were in until they were in deep.
Right. So this first story is from Dina, who shared this tale at a recent Stoop that we had at a brewery. Checkerspot is a brewery. And the theme of the show was more room in a broken heart. So you're going to hear some ambient sounds of brewery noise.
Shattered glass, yeah. Burps.
No. But yeah, she captivated the room. Don't be deceived by any of the ambient noise because she had our undivided attention. Take a listen.
So I am from Baltimore. I was born in West Baltimore into a very large family. So both of my parents are from sets of 10, which means I have over 50 cousins, and we all live in the area. We didn't have a lot growing up, but we didn't know that because we were all so close. So we took turns, you know, living with each other when money was tight. I actually started to become aware of what we didn't have when I got accepted into Roland Park Middle School in one of their gifted and talented programs. And I had to catch three buses to get to school and home. And I started seeing how different people lived just a few miles from me. And I started to wonder, like, why can't I live this way? So I decided I would lean into education, and I was going to go to school, and I was going to make a lot of money, and I was going to move my whole family out of the hood. Like, that was my whole goal. And I just wanted to lean into education. My father also wanted a different life, and he decided to lean into spirituality. He wanted to be a part of something bigger. So when I was about 10 years old, he became in contact with a religious denomination, and he started taking me down to their temple for meetings. And within this group, they were telling us that we were special, we were good, despite what our environment was telling us, and that if we just worked together, we could create better experiences for ourselves. And so after about 2 years of going to those meetings, he decided he was ready to lock in. He's like, Dina, I'm about to go be with this community. I'm gonna live on the property, and you should come with me if you want. And of course, because my face was next to Daddy's girl in the dictionary, I was like, say less, Dad, where are we going? And so I left my whole family. I dropped out of school. By then I was a freshman at Western, and I dropped out of school, moved with him, cut off the family. Now, this group had a lot of rules, which didn't matter too much to me because I was used to rules. I'm a kid. There's rules everywhere. Schools have rules. Families have rules. And I saw that I was with my dad, so it didn't matter. And we were actually doing good things. And so the community itself, the rules were in every part of our life. We were told what we could wear, what we could eat, how many times a day we could eat, who we could marry, when or if we could have children, who we could speak to. So I was not allowed to, we were encouraged to cut off anybody who wasn't a part of this community. I was allowed to still talk to my mom because I was a minor and they didn't want any of that legal trouble, but nearly everybody else was cut out of our life. But the group had a lot of ways for me to channel my energy. So we had farms, mills, there were supermarkets, grocery stores, and we had eventually moved to Kansas. And the city where we were, they actually really loved our group. They were giving us buildings for a dollar. There were news stories about how we were revitalizing the community, and they were very proud. But they didn't know behind the scenes that none of us young people were going into any real accredited schools. They didn't know that we were working all day, and you know that there was this level of control. But I was okay because I had my dad. That is until about 6 years of being in the community, my dad left. in the middle of the night. He didn't tell me he was leaving. He didn't tell me where he was going. And so I just get a call one morning like, hey, do you know where your dad is? And that broke me because he was my everything. And he's the whole reason why I like threw my whole life away and moved to Kansas. So, I mean, no shade to Kansas. Kansas is great. And so without my dad being there, without that person being there, I drew even further in the community. So I even started talking to my mom less. You know, they had already had control in terms of we didn't have TVs. We didn't know really what was going on outside of the community. But I made no attempts to contact anyone. I just drew within. I ended up marrying one of the other young people who had grown up in the community. We had a child together, and that community became my whole entire life. After about 18 years, just before I turned 30, I got a message that the community was disbanding. It was no longer sustainable. And so they were basically like, hey, good luck. And so I was thrust into the world with a toddler, hadn't had any formal education since I was 12. I didn't have any money, never had a bank account. And I was afraid because all of a sudden the world was big. Those small communities are oddly comforting because even though everything was controlling, I wasn't in Baltimore anymore. I wasn't worried about a stray bullet or anything. If I followed the rules, I would be fine. But now all of a sudden the world was big and there were so many choices. But on top of that, I lost this community and everyone that I had known. And there's very little heartbreak that I've experienced in my life that matched the feelings that I had when that whole community was taken away from me and all the things that I believed to be true that served as the foundation for who I am and what I wanted out of life. And so I was very, very, very afraid. I wasn't making any friends, but I was afraid to come home because I literally cut everyone off for 18 years. So I said, let me go hard and just work, because I knew how to work. That's one thing. They taught us how to work. So I was working for about 2 years. I was working three jobs, 6 a.m. to midnight. I was taking care of my kid, and I just was spinning my wheels. I wasn't getting anywhere. So I finally broke down, and I called my mom, and I said, Mom, can I come home? She said, of course. Like, I've been waiting 18 years for you to make this decision. And so I moved home with my 4-year-old. Into that, and she gave me a chance to get out of survival mode and start to build. So I enrolled in school. I started at Baltimore City Community College because they had to get me up to college level after I got my GED. And so since then, I have earned my bachelor's and master's from Towson University, and now I'm a thank you. And I'm a doctoral candidate right now at Morgan State University. My son is 16 now. He's at City College, City Forever. But the biggest thing for me is one day I was watching A&E. It's a channel. And they were doing this series called Cults and Extreme Beliefs. And I was watching one of the episodes, and it had the community that I had been a part of for 18 years. And I'm like, hold up. Like, I was in a cult. Like, it never occurred to me that that's what it was. And so after that, I decided, you know, I need to probably go be in therapy. So I connected with a really lovely therapist who's been helping me kind of learn how to make connections again. And so that's the biggest part. I was afraid of being a part of communities because I didn't want to be, like, fully engulfed. I wouldn't even get a gym membership because I was afraid, like, I would never be able to leave the gym again. But now I'm happy to report I officially have a gym membership. And I have made 3 new friends in the past couple of years, and so I'm really excited about being open to community again. Thank you.
I just got the moment where she's watching A&E And she's watching about her cult, but she had no idea until that moment that it was considered a cult is exactly how people end up being in cults. And then my favorite was when she was like, when I got out of it, I didn't want to, you know, I refused to like even have a gym membership because she just didn't want anything that would have her tied to a community that she would have a hard time disentangling from.
Totally. Yeah, that would really make you second guess everything that has a membership.
Yeah.
Like Audible, you know, that's probably a cult. And Prime, definitely a cult. And
let's not.
Well, you're improv cult, so.
Yeah, that's true. I'm a proud improv cult member, sadly.
No.
However, we're going to take a quick break. And then when we come back, another Stoop story. Okay, so this storyteller, Joanne Juskis, told this story years ago.
Long time ago.
And it's about her and her boyfriend being involved in a community that I think many of you have probably heard about. Take a listen.
I've been on the stage many times, but not as a storyteller. This is brand new. When I was 14 years old, I fell in love with a boy who was into religion. And Christianity, in particular. It gets better, though. And I was raised in an atheistic household where my father worked very hard to protect me from any kind of religion. So, of course, I was curious, you know. And the first thing we did was go to this guy's church. And, you know, I found it all very interesting. And we were very close. And unfortunately, about a year later, his parents relocated 300 miles away from where we lived in New York State to Washington, D.C. And I was heartbroken. So I did everything I could to skip a grade in high school and graduate early and run away to be with him. And we got a little efficiency apartment in Washington. And by this time, you know, fast forward, he's turned from Christianity to hallucinogens and Eastern mysticism, which was much more fun, actually. So, but he was really, we were both very, very fervent seekers, but he was really the leader. He was sort of a mentor to me, I guess, more than even a lover, but he was into Scientology and Divine Light Mission and the Hare Krishnas and, you know, just dragging me from one place to another. And, you know, I was very bewildered. But he settled on the Hare Krishnas. He said, this is it. This is the one. We're going to do this now. So I wasn't into it. I thought, I saw them on the streets of Georgetown. I thought they were crazy. I couldn't ever imagine myself, you know, doing that kind of thing. But he was very insistent, and but I was very resistant. And I was going by train to New York to visit my parents, and I missed my bus to the train, so I had to go into the apartment and call a cab. And when I called the cab, he was sticking a magazine into my backpack. And it was Back to Godhead magazine, the magazine of the Hare Krishna movement. So, you know, I was like, okay. And when I was on the train, I had nothing to do, and I opened the magazine, and I found myself reading it cover to cover. I was just, you know, I had very negative feelings about it up until that point, but I found myself so attracted to the ancient Indian wisdom. I was, you know, here were people 24 hours a day practicing bhakti yoga, this yoga of devotion, and I was very attracted to it suddenly, like overnight. So when I came back from New York, I quit my job, I gave away all my possessions, and I moved into the Hare Krishna Temple in Potomac, Maryland. And he moved in about a week after I did, and a couple weeks after that, and we had been living together, but when we moved to the Hare Krishnas, they had a very segregated policy of the sexes, and you really couldn't associate, especially back then, I think it's changed now, but you couldn't even really speak to a member of the opposite sex unless you were married. So this was very difficult, especially for my boyfriend. I was kind of just going gung-ho at that point. I was like, what boyfriend? I don't know. But anyway, the temple president called us into his office on a Friday evening, and he suggested that we get married. And we were thinking about getting married anyway, so we decided, okay, we'll get engaged. And the very next day, his mother showed up and asked him to come with her. She wanted him to help her move or something. And there was something about it that I felt very uneasy about. I just had a feeling. And when I kissed him goodbye, I just felt like maybe I wasn't going to see him again. And sure enough, I found out later, his mother took him down the road to an awaiting van with these thugs, deprogramming thugs. And, you know, they bound him up. They took him to a motel. They didn't let him eat or sleep. They, you know, gave him all kinds of information about his religious choice. And then they shipped him out to Minnesota for about 6 weeks to a deprogramming camp. And I don't know if they still run these places, but apparently you can get deprogrammed from any religion you want, or even if your parents don't like your boyfriend or your girlfriend. You know, there were people like that. So he was there for 6 weeks, and he came back and tried to get in touch with me. But by that time, I was really very involved with what I was doing. I was studying the Vedic scriptures. I was getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning and chanting and dancing and meditating and hearing classes for hours. And he was stalking me for a while. And he contacted my father, and he asked my father to give him $10,000 to get me deprogrammed. And my father, still not too happy that the boyfriend had gotten me into this in the first place, was not too keen on giving him $10,000 to get me out. So I was in, and I actually stayed in the Hare Krishnas for 10 years. And it was very cool. I mean, I really got to dive in deeply to something. I felt like I was like, it was the equivalent of a PhD or something in spirituality and spiritual life. And it was very positive in many ways. But on the other hand, after 10 years, I felt like I was living in clothes that were too tight. And it just didn't feel right. And more importantly, I started to feel very numb. Like all the spiritual fervor that I had had that brought me to that place was suddenly gone. And I was just feeling nothing. So it was probably the most difficult thing I could do to get out. Not because they were preventing me, but, you know, after you've committed yourself for those many years, and I didn't have anything in the outside world. I had been cloistered. So I had to go through a really significant dark night of the soul where I had to, you know, live with the possibility that there may be no God in my life, that God would turn his back on me. And it was very, very difficult. Probably the only more difficult thing was actually joining. And it was a similar thing where I had to transform so completely out of my mindset. And to this day, it's been many years, but to this day, I'm still working on integrating the whole experience and trying to take the good and live my life in a way that's sort of free from the belief system that I was so committed to. But I don't know, have I passed 5 minutes yet? Okay. Anyway, so we met up again about 6 years later, the boyfriend and I, and it was very fascinating because he was like, what happened to you that day? And I was like, what happened to you? I mean, we were really very, very serious and just hadn't seen each other in many, many years, but he had gone back to Christianity, and at the time I saw him, I was still in the Hare Krishnas, and he used to look kind of like John Lennon. He was tall and thin and kind of cute, and he was really big and fat, so it wasn't as hard to... No, but anyway, I guess the real ending of the story is that when I thought I was going to find darkness, I really found a full spiritual life just within myself, and I continue to. But I have to say, like, my mantra for all those years was the Hare Krishna mantra, which I don't know if you know it. I'm going to say it. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And my mantra at this point is, this is my fucking life.
Did you have any exposure to the Hare Krishnas at Penn State?
Not at Penn State, but I remember seeing them traveling like around Europe and stuff.
Yeah.
I don't think I realized they were a cult. I just thought they were.
Well, like in this story, Joanne would say they aren't. It's fascinating. You know, that's what's really complicated.
It's a fine line between a gym membership and a cult. I mean, let's be honest. CrossFit is a cult.
Or corpo power yoga.
It's not a cult.
Oh, I think there are many that
would hold up.
Beg.
I'm in a cult. All right. Thank y'all for listening today. Thanks to Maureen Harvey for producing the podcast. Please check out our website, stoopstorytelling.com, where you can get info about a show on May 8th at the Creative Alliance. It's called Look for the Helpers, stories about first responders, good neighbors, and unexpected heroes. So that's stoopstorytelling.com, and you can find us on Instagram and Facebook at Stoop Storytelling Series.
All right.
See you next time.